It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have overcast skies. It is 30 degrees, and they have 10 full miles of visibility at the airport. They are also registering west winds at 14, gusting to 25. Just a chance of snow, becoming mostly sunny skies this afternoon, according to the Weather Service. High near 31 today, northwest winds gusting as high as 40 and as high as 50 tonight, as high as 60 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, for the first time in 30 years, electric rates are going up in Kodiak. Plus, Governor Mike Dunleavy has thrown some shade on the recently passed bill that would boost state education funding. And Congresswoman Mary Peltola was positive and leaned into unity and bipartisanship in her speech to the legislature.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Congress is again confronting the threat of a partial government shutdown as it approaches a pair of funding deadlines, this Friday and March 8th. NPR's Tamara Keith reports President Biden sat down today with Congress's four senior Democratic and Republican lawmakers, all of whom emerged from today's meeting expressing optimism.
After their meeting in the Oval Office, both House Speaker Mike Johnson and Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries hit a similar note about keeping the government funded.
We're very optimistic. I hope that the other leaders came out here and told you the same. We believe that we can get to agreement on these issues and prevent a government shutdown.
I'm cautiously optimistic that we can do what is necessary within the next day or so to close down these bills and avoid a government shutdown.
The main area of disagreement is a separate funding measure to provide weapons to Ukraine. Speaker Johnson says the U.S. border must be the top priority, while Biden and the other leaders say Ukraine can't wait. Tamara Keith, NPR News, the White House.
Just a few hours left to vote in Michigan's presidential primaries. NPR's Elena Moore says President Biden and former President Donald Trump are expected to win their respective parties' contests.
Despite being a crucial battleground state, there's little candidate buzz in Michigan today. On the Democratic side, Biden faces deep division among some of his base that supported him in 2020, notably Arab and Muslim Americans in the state. A campaign called Listen to Michigan is urging Democrats to vote uncommitted as a statement against Biden's handling of Israel's war in Gaza. They want him to call for an immediate and permanent ceasefire and stop sending additional aid to Israel. On the Republican side, former South Carolina governor and long-shot presidential contender Nikki Haley was the only candidate to make in-person stops in the state this week. But she faces a steep challenge against Trump. Elena Moore, NPR News, Detroit.
Only some of the state's Republican delegates are up for grabs tonight, though. A majority of them will be allocated at the GOP's caucus-style convention March 2nd. President Biden says he hopes to see a temporary ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war next Monday. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the administration envisions an extended pause.
That would allow for several weeks, hopefully up to six, where there would be no fighting, so that we can get all the hostages out, increase the flow of humanitarian assistance, but just as critically, get the fighting stopped.
So far, the Israeli government appears to be moving forward with its operational plans in Rafah, at the southern tip of the Gaza Strip, where more than a million displaced Palestinians are taking refuge. Privately owned Odysseus spacecraft has only hours left to live. It's running out of battery life now that the sunlight's no longer hitting the probe's solar panels. Last week, it tipped over as it touched down on the moon. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. For the first time in 30 years, electric rates are going up in Kodiak. The Kodiak Electric Association announced a proposed 12.5% rate hike for all customers in an open letter published on the company's website last week. That means the average resident will see a monthly bill that costs about $12 more, according to the local utility. The rate increase will likely hit customers later this spring. The utility provider's board of directors is still finalizing the details of the rate increase, but Darren Scott, the president and chief executive officer of KEA, says the proposed hike is necessary due to two specific factors.
With inflation the way it's been, and then that's just a cumulative effect of the inflation, and then we're seeing some lower sales and some lower projected sales of fishing. Those two combined, we just would not have enough revenue to do the things we need to do.
Inflation has primarily affected the electrical equipment KEA uses in almost every home across Kodiak, with significant cost increases over the last few years since the COVID-19 pandemic. Scott says that wait times for new equipment have spiked significantly as well.
For example, transformers. I mean, every house has it, every service has it, and they've gone up astronomically over the last few years. We've seen them, depending on the size, going up almost 500% increase in cost, and their lead times have gone dramatically longer, too, which has been odd. But it's been a struggle for us to keep up with those kind of costs.
On top of rising equipment costs, Kodiak's non-residential electric sales are down, too. Scott says a third of KEA's power is sold to local fish processing plants. The company anticipates Trident Seafood's plan to sell off its downtown facility, and an overall decline in the fishing industry will also affect rates.
Trident is a very, very large consumer of power, and definitely that impact and even other processors, you know, having to process or processing less fish definitely comes right back to us in our bottom line.
The rate increase will take place on April 1st after the utility's board of directors finalizes the numbers during their upcoming meeting on March 28th. KEA's chief executive officer expects this will be a one-time rate increase, not a multi-year step increase, and hopes this will be the only change in electric rates for the foreseeable future. Governor Mike Dunleavy cast doubt on the future of a bill that would boost state education funding and implement other reforms on Monday, shortly after the Senate sent the bill to his desk. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has this report.
The bipartisan bill would increase the base per student funding to school districts by $680. That's the first substantial increase since 2016. It would also provide new support to charter and correspondence schools and offer funding to help young students struggling to read. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, said immediately after the 18-1 Senate vote that he was glad to see lawmakers working together to address the state's struggling schools.
I think we made major progress, and I'm really proud of the fact that this House sent us a bill that we could agree to. And it's out, it's done, and now we'll see what happens when the next shoe falls.
He didn't have to wait long. Half an hour later, in a social media post, Dunleavy said the bill, quote, falls far short of improving outcomes for students. He said the bill fails to improve access to public charter schools, does nothing to recruit or retain teachers, and does not support the Alaska Reads Act. That's a bill aimed at early literacy that passed a few years ago. But Dunleavy did not say specifically whether he would veto the bill, and the governor's press office did not expand on his remarks. The bill includes a new appeal process for charter schools and an education department position tasked with helping districts expand charter schools. But it does not include a proposal endorsed by Dunleavy's administration that would have created a new approval process for charter schools. The bill also does not include a Dunleavy proposal that would have created bonuses of up to $15,000 for teachers. Instead, the bill has non-binding language instructing school districts to spend their increased funding on salaries and retention bonuses for teachers. The bill also includes funding to help elementary schoolers who are struggling to read. Responding to Dunleavy's statement, Representative Zach Fields, an Anchorage Democrat, says the bill addresses the governor's priorities.
Just stepping back politically, I think actually everyone wins from the bill. Of course, most importantly, kids get more predictable school funding and smaller class sizes.
Just three lawmakers across the House and Senate voted against the bill, and Field says that makes it unlikely that Dunleavy would actually veto the bill. Representative Craig Johnson, an Anchorage Republican who led the effort to pass the bill on the part of the House Majority Caucus, declined to speculate on whether lawmakers would vote to override a possible veto.
So I haven't talked to the governor about a veto or anything else, so It's in his ballpark. That's the way the system works.
If he does wind up vetoing it, do you think the votes are there to override the veto?
I'm not going to count anybody's votes.
Despite the broad support, it's not entirely clear that lawmakers have the necessary 40 votes between the House and Senate to override. Senator Shelley Hughes, a Palmer Republican, voted for the bill on Monday, but said she would not vote to override a veto. Dunleavy has 15 days, excluding Sundays, to either sign or veto the bill once it's formally transmitted to him. Otherwise, it becomes law without his signature. Lawmakers say a veto or a delay in signing could delay the impact of a provision increasing internet speeds at rural low-income school districts. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Congresswoman Mary Peltola leaned into unity in her annual address to the Alaska legislature on Monday. As reported by Alaska Public Media, she pointed to a new federal action against supermarket consolidation as a win for the state, for her efforts, and for what she sees as the Alaska model of bipartisanship.
Alaska has convinced the Federal Trade Commission to sue to block the Kroger-Albertsons merger.
The proposed supermarket merger is intensely unpopular in Alaska. Kroger owns Fred Meyer stores. Albertsons owns Safeway and Cars. Peltola, a Democrat, has rallied Alaska opposition, amplifying local concerns that combining the major grocery chains would bring higher food prices and eliminate union jobs. She and the state's U.S. senators wrote letters to the FTC opposing the merger. Peltola says she also met with the FTC chair and conveyed what Alaskans told her.
And today the FTC informed me that it was those listening sessions, hearing from regular people like they have never heard before, that not only convinced them to move to stop this merger, but it also created a new model for how the FTC will engage with constituents when making big decisions that affect them and their lives.
The speech was infused with Peltola's brand of politics. She shared credit, she praised the Republican senators, and she struck an inclusive note. The first Alaska Native member of Congress said great Alaskans come from across the populace, regardless of lineage.
The parents and grandparents who persevered through hardship worked exciting and challenging jobs in booming industries. Whether they came from a long line of Alaskans or were just one of the many who moved here, fell in love, and never left.
The supermarket merger isn't dead yet. The FTC has authorized a lawsuit, but its track record in court is mixed. Kroger says it will still allow for competition in Alaska. It proposes to sell 14 of the 35 Cars Safeway stores to another company. Peltola is running for re-election this year, hoping to win her second full term as Alaska's sole member in the U.S. House. Two prominent Republicans have also filed for the seat, Nick Begich III and Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom. More than 100 people gathered in downtown Juneau Saturday afternoon for a rally to urge city and state officials in Alaska to support a ceasefire in Gaza. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, Juneau Assembly members are considering whether the city and borough of Juneau should take an official stance on the issue.
The gazebo at Marine Park was packed, as a crowd of about 150 people stood in the cold. They held signs, and many wore the colors of the flag of Palestine. The residents were there to show their support of Palestinians amid the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas. They also urged officials in Juneau and across the state and country to call for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza, where health officials say thousands of Palestinians have been killed in Israeli airstrikes. Nicole Church, an indigenous singer and songwriter, gave an impassioned speech at the event and was one of the many who called what was happening in Gaza a genocide.
Make no mistake, there is a genocide happening right now in Gaza as we speak.
According to the health ministry in Gaza, the death toll since the conflict began in October is nearly 30,000. The event, organized by Juneau for Palestine, lasted nearly 2 hours. Multiple speakers shared stories and their views on the issue. Ernenstein Sankathat Hayes, who is an award-winning Tlingit author and elder, said she often asks herself what she would do if something like what is happening in Gaza happened in Juneau today.
What would I do? Where could I go? What would we do? Where would we be safe? Our homes would be rubble. Our hospitals would be bombed. Where would we take our wounded loved ones to find care, to be safe?
The organizers shared a citizen's resolution calling for a permanent ceasefire, among other requests, to the Juneau Assembly. The group previously offered the resolution to the Assembly at a public meeting last month. Only two Juneau Assembly members were at the event on Saturday, Christine Wall and Paul Kelly. In an interview, Wall said she's appalled at what is happening in Gaza.
There are so many people dying right now, and the U.S. government is participating in that. And it feels hopeless sometimes, but when you get together with your community, it's helpful to see how many people are in opposition to that.
She said she is planning to speak with other assembly members this week to gauge whether they would support a resolution.
To me, this is something that if enough people speak up in our community, communities across the country, maybe we can have a difference.
Paul Kelly said similar, noting that he was inspired by the people who spoke at the rally, but worries a resolution that takes a stance could isolate some members of the community.
Before we do a resolution that speaks to how we as a community are taking a position, I want to make sure that I'm not alienating any of my own constituents as well.
Similar resolutions are being considered in cities across Alaska. The Anchorage Assembly is expected to vote Tuesday on a resolution calling on Alaska's congressional delegation to support a ceasefire in Gaza. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation incorporated drone use into its operations in 2019 to help streamline survey and inspection efforts. The department currently has about 30 active drone pilots around the state. As KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports, winter can be an ideal time for flight proficiency training.
Which one is up and down? And
the left side is the up and down one. So.
Up and down, okay.
In the parking lot of Arc Lake, just outside Soldotna, two environmental program specialists orient themselves with the controls and operations of a drone with a built-in camera. The piece of technology is just one of many in the Department of Environmental Conservation's fleet, some of which have thermal cameras and water sampling capabilities. The practice flight is the Soldotna branch's first of the year, as recent cold weather conditions have prevented any airtime. When gusts the night before exceeded speeds of 40 miles per hour, but diminished to a light breeze by morning.
Every month we really try to get out and get the drone in the air.
This is Ryan Peterson, a certified drone pilot with the department. He says this time of year, they focus on flight training and proficiency.
The challenge in the wintertime is weather, and the drones have operating conditions and limitations.
The agency's Soldotna office currently has 3 drone pilots, each representing different divisions. Peterson works for the department's water quality program, ensuring that wastewater is properly discharged to protect human health and the environment. He primarily oversees proper installation and maintenance of septic tanks.
You could take aerial imagery with a proficient flight pilot now while you're constructing. It's not going to be coordination, or you don't have to wait for a surveyor for the entire time. You can get a surveyor out afterwards to get the official survey, but during construction, you can work with your drone and provide that data to like the state, to the users, and it really documents where your infrastructure is installed.
Peterson says drones can also be used for inspecting disposal systems from a bird's eye view. He says drone use not only makes his job more efficient, but helps cut related survey costs.
To get a replicate of that is you're going to need to get an actual plane in the air and a flight survey done. And this allows the department and all drone users to replicate that, but on a much smaller scale and a safer scale. It's using that new technology and showing it how it can be utilized to do our business better. Yeah, so to the measure, like if you know the wind direction is where it is, Tessa, like I always recommend like pointing your drone like initially to the wind. So if you have a general direction, like spin it around. Ideally, yeah. We should have put that in that location already, but
The Soldotna office recently onboarded a new drone pilot for its spill prevention and response division. Tessa Gottlob just completed the necessary coursework, which instructs users on procedures, regulations, and operating requirements for safely flying drones. She has only flown in the field once before.
If you have an accident, something happens, an oil leaks from a tanker truck, from a facility, sending a drone up into the air to see where this oil is going and being able to track it, that's going to help us respond so we know where to put our response equipment, where we need to start the recovery operations. It can also identify if the leak is from some unknown component at an oil facility. It'd be pretty easy to identify with the aerial vision. And the other thing to look at, I mean, we are close to the landfill, so keeping an eye out for birds. Some like birds of prey will, they might go after the drone, or one might be just flying by and unlucky and run into it. So
after getting a feel for the controls, Gottlob practices flying the drone around. She scans the sky for curious birds and other airborne hazards. Due to the nature of wintertime flying, the drone only stays in the air for a few minutes, as battery life begins to decrease and fingertips operating the system go numb. Here's Peterson again.
So one of the big things I like to show is how this recent technology can be used to make our jobs or the requirements of the department more transparent, or also make their lives easier. So I work with a lot of contractors and engineers, and it's really showing that this new technology can be utilized in their job processes as well as the department to further our mission.
The department's drone pilots can be used in partner agency operations, including those of the Environmental Protection Agency and the Coast Guard. In his job, Peterson feels he's following in the footsteps of his father and grandfather, who were both pilots. In Soldotna, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Two people were killed and two were seriously wounded during a shooting at a home in Point Hope on Sunday. A 16-year-old boy is in custody, according to the Anchorage Daily News. Details were slow to emerge about the shooting in the village on Alaska's northwest coast, which shook the small community and prompted a local school's closure. The newspaper, citing court documents, reported that the teenage suspect has been charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of first-degree attempted murder. State law allows minors 16 and older to be tried in adult court on murder charges.
A safety audit finds confusion among Boeing's rank and file. I'm Novosafa with a Marketplace Minute. A report by a panel of experts says there's a disconnect between Boeing's senior management and employees, with confusion over new safety practices. Employees are also worried about retaliation for raising concerns. Congress ordered the report prior to last month's accident in which a door plug blew out of an Alaska Airlines MAX jet mid-flight. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is urging allies to liquidate $300 billion worth of Russian assets. The money would go to Ukraine for reconstruction. The assets were frozen after Russia invaded 2 years ago. Macy's plans to close 150 stores and open a handful of Bloomingdale's stores. The retailer posted lower sales over the holidays. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 27th day of February, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:09. It will set again at 6:35. That will give us 10 hours and 26 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 47 degrees, and our record low was minus 6 degrees. That record high temperature was set in 2022, and the record low was set in 1986. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 3:29 this afternoon here on the east side and be 7.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:32 p.m. of 5/10 of 1 foot. Over on the west side, your next high tide will happen at 3:59, call it 4 p.m., and be 13.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:10 p.m. of 7/10 of 1 foot. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. It's not good. Gale warning through Wednesday, northwest 35 today, becoming northwest 45 tonight, 12-foot seas, becoming 11 feet tonight with freezing spray tonight and tomorrow on our east side. For tomorrow, look for northwest winds to 40 knots for tomorrow and tomorrow night, 11-foot seas, northwest 40 on Thursday with 12-foot seas, and northwest 30 on Friday, seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through Wednesday there as well, with a heavy freezing spray warning tonight and tomorrow. For today in the Shelikof, northwest 35, becoming northwest 45 tonight, 8-foot seas, building to 11 feet tonight, and look for heavy freezing spray tonight, freezing spray today, and heavy freezing spray tomorrow, especially out of western bays and passes. Out of western bays and passes, look for gusts up to 55 knots and 11-foot seas in the Shelikof tomorrow. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include two happening today. At 3 p.m., the Solid Waste Contract Committee will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. At 6 p.m. today, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their budget work session in the Bayside Fire Hall. That's happening at 6 p.m. today. Tomorrow, the Assembly and the City Council will be having a joint work session in the Kodiak Public Library's Multipurpose Room. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And we have Friday and Saturday meetings this week. On Friday, the Mission Lake Tidegate service area will be having its board budget public hearing in the Borough Conference Room. That's happening at 5 p.m. on Friday, the Mission Lake Tidegate service area. On Saturday, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their board budget work session in the Bayside Fire Hall at 9 a.m. on Saturday. And on Monday, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting in the Providence Barometer Conference Room at 3 p.m. Things happening in the public library? Well, you can still complete your February genre reading challenge that ends February 29th. Record your progress on kodiak.beanstack.org. And now is the time to sign up for next month's challenge, I Did a Read. For more information, ask for help at the front desk of the library. Teens, do you need a calming study space? Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is lo-fi and chill. Unwind with calming lights, lo-fi tunes, and a relaxing atmosphere. Ideal for focused study or just hanging out with friends. It's for ages 13 and up. And tomorrow at 3:30 p.m., the famous Lego Club. Kids under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Oh, and Thursday is the next chess club gathering. That's happening at 3 p.m. at the library, next chess club gathering. And on Friday, the Lego Ninjago movie will be shown. That's happening at 3:30 p.m. for the children's movie. It is rated PG. Runtime is 1 hour 40 minutes. Lego Ninjago movie Friday at 3:30 p.m. at the library. The Kodiak Area Mentoring Program is offering a community workshop on addiction and recovery. It's a four-part workshop with an emphasis on methamphetamines, as well as fentanyl and other opioids. It's designed for friends and families of substance abusers, as well as service providers and concerned family members. The next session focuses on the cost of recovery and will be held Saturday, March 9th from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. It will provide an overview of addiction recovery presented by James Price. The workshops are held at the Kodiak Area Mentoring Program. That's next door and upstairs from AT&T. Again, that's next Friday, or Saturday, March 9th, 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.